I see dead people. It still gives me the you know, it's kind of eerie. Remember when you first heard that? Remember, how many of you guys remember that? You heard that and it was like, whoa. It was long before Ghost Whisperer, you know, before that was a popular thing. I see dead people. You know, this was Jesus's third woe to the Pharisees in Luke chapter 11. We've been working through these six woes that Jesus has towards the Pharisees. And Jesus says, I see dead people. And it's you. He says, woe to you, Pharisees. You're dead. There's a few more details to this. It's not just that simple. But before we go to our passage in Luke, we're going to take a detour to the Matthew version of this woe statement. In Matthew chapter 23, he captures seven woe statements of Jesus. And we've kind of looked at that a little bit as we've been walking through the series. And this one is the one that talks about, I see dead people. Matthew 23, verse 27, he says, woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You're like whitewashed tombs who look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead men's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to be people as right, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. So here's what Jesus is saying, in short. Man, you're looking good on the outside, but on the inside, you're really dead. Let's write that down. If you guys are taking notes, flip your bulletins over. Looking good on the outside, but really, you're dead on the inside. You know, we've had different things. I'm a steak lover. Do we have any other steak lovers here? Okay. I like my steak medium rare. Okay. I like my first cut to be its last moo. You know? Done. Now, my friend Mike Ladd, he likes his, the guy up here jamming over here, he likes his rare. And I don't go that far because he likes to cut it a few times while it's still kicking, you know, and it's done, you know. I like just that first one, but I like it medium rare. And I've had many steaks. In fact, I was out to eat with Dan, Sean, and Wyatt, Dan and Dina. I just saw that. There's Dina. And got a steak, and man, it looked so good on the outside. And it was nice and seared, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be nice. But, and then I kind of touched it with my fork, and it didn't kind of move the way a medium rare steak does. It just kind of, the whole thing kind of shifted. I was like, oh, no. Cut into it, and it was just like, it was gray, maybe a little bit of pink in there. Remember that, Dina? And I'm like, it's dead on the inside. I like my steak with a little life. And it's dead because, you know, if you eat the steak the right way, you don't need steak sauce. Right? Amen? God provides the steak sauce for you if you eat a steak the right way. This one, no steak sauce inside of it where it should have been. It looked great on the outside, but on the inside, it was dead. Now, some of you guys might not be steak lovers. I can accept that. I forgive you, and you know, you're still welcome to come here and worship with us. But you know, some of us, maybe it's an apple. You know, ever picked up an apple and you squeeze, apple lover, I just ate an apple. I love apples. Apple lovers, you'll squeeze the apple just to make sure it's nice and firm. And you get it nice and firm and you expect that nice crisp and just get that little spray, you know, from that first bite, you know what I'm talking about? And you know that's a good apple. And some of the ones you picked up there and you test it, and nice and firm, and it's applesauce. And I don't know how it does it. I don't know how apples can have that solid of a texture on the outside, and you bite it and it's all mush inside. It's just nasty. On the outside, it looked beautiful. But on the inside, it was just filled with nasty stuff. Now, some of you might be thinking, wasn't the first message in this series about being fake? Wasn't it about being a hypocrite? Isn't this the same subject? Are we just recovering this in a different manner? Well, it is. But it's a more specific form of hypocrisy. It's a more toxic level of being fake. Let me explain a little bit to you here about what Matthew's account here of what Jesus shared with the Pharisees has to do. He talks about these whitewashed tombs. During the time of festivals, the tombs and the grave sites, they were decorated, and this served two purposes. I want to give you the secondary purpose first and the primary purpose second, just so that we're not getting things completely out of order. Does that make sense? Okay, if you're me, it makes sense. All right, the secondary purpose really was kind of a byproduct, and that was that you didn't want to see dead things at a party, right? That kind of dampens the mood. So decorate the dead things. Decorate the tombs. Decorate the grave sites. You know, so that when you're at that celebration, you look over there and you say, man, it's so festive. Even the dead people are celebrating. Even they're festive over there. You know, that was a secondary piece of it. But the primary reason why they would do this was so that to make sure that everyone saw the graves. It was to bring attention to the graves so that they wouldn't go near where the dead things were. So that they could avoid the dead things, so they could avoid them. Because according to Jewish law, when you came into contact with, or you even got too close to a dead body or even dead bones, then you would be considered unclean. And what that meant during a festival is your party's over. Done. No party on Garth. Nothing. You're done. Because you couldn't participate in the festival once you got labeled as unclean. It was game over. It was like when you play the game Simon Says, and you did something that Simon didn't say. You know, Simon Says jump up and down. Simon Says pat your head. Simon Says smile while you're jumping up and down, patting your head. Okay, you can stop jumping. And you stop jumping, and you get busted. What do you have to do? You have to go sit out. It's game over. And that's what would happen if you became unclean during or before a festival. You had to sit it out, and you had to wait till the next festival. And so they wanted to make sure that that didn't happen. And this is kind of the angle that Luke takes in his version. So here's Luke's version of this woe to you. Verse 44 of chapter 11. He says, woe to you because you are like unmarked graves. Kind of a little different twist. Which men walk over without knowing it. So he's saying, woe to you because you're dead. And you're dead in such a way that nobody can see it. So it's a little bit of that fake, the hypocrisy. But you're... when people walk over you, they don't even know that they've been contaminated. Okay, so they would decorate the graves so that they'd know not to go near them so they wouldn't become unclean. But if you had an unmarked grave, people could walk over an unmarked grave and they wouldn't know it, but they became unclean. And so he's saying, woe to you because you are poisoning others without them even knowing that you are. Last Saturday, we were at the Indiana State Fair, and we were there earlier in the day before the tragic event happened. And we were there, and we've got a three-year-old and a five-year-old, and we're kind of at that stage where we're kind of phasing out of strollers, but it's nice to have them around. And so we had the strollers out, and strollers also, not only do they carry kids, but they carry, yeah, stuff, coolers, drinks, you know, and so that's nice. So, you know, if I have to push the stroller around and keep track of my kid for the first, you know, 5 hours, but it saves me the last half hour of carrying him on my shoulders, it's worth it. And especially at the age of five, because now he pushes the stroller that has the stuff in it, and I just watch. So it's kind of nice. Unless you're in the cattle barn, and he's pushing, and you, Isaiah, stop. And I mean, he listens just like every five-year-old listens. Great. And of course, he goes right over these pieces of cow pie that have been left behind and just coats both right wheels of the stroller. And it just, you know how it just kind of rolls up on it? Kind of that snowball. Oh, I don't want to be too graphic, but I want you to get the picture. You know, and cattle barns, they don't smell great. Those of you who are into livestock, you're like, oh, it smells like home. That's you for me? No. No. Good smelling livestock is the steak I was talking about earlier. That's good smelling livestock. Now, barns, no. But and then this, just kind of squishing it, just emitted more of a smell, and it was just nasty. Luckily, there was a hose nearby. We hosed off. We kept on going. But the point was, he didn't see it, and he got all into it. We've done that before, haven't we? You've stepped in it, haven't you? And I've heard it said that you step in it and then you say it, you know. And you know, whatever word came to your mind, that's up to you. Don't judge me on that, okay? I don't know what word came in your head. That's up to you. But you know, you got that feeling. You step in and you're like, oh, I know what. I just stepped in. And you look down and you're like, you know, if I'd have known it was there, I wouldn't have stepped in it, but you stepped in it. Or maybe it's like when people spit out their bubble gum at the gas station or on the sidewalk. We've been there before, haven't we? And you don't know that you stepped into it until you try to move, and then you feel that extra tension on your foot. And when you lift it up, there's that pink string from your shoe to the concrete. And it's like, oh, man. And a lot of times it happens when you're late. You're on your way somewhere, and you're rushed, and you got to scrape this gum off your shoe because some guy spit it out. You know, if I'd have known it was there, I could have avoided it. And sometimes it happens when you're driving, and the stakes are even more expensive. Years ago, before the kids, Jesse and I were driving back from Columbus to Portsmouth, down 23. It was a snowy day. The roads had just been plowed, so it was nice and clear on the roads. It was cold. It was late. It was dark. And we came up to this bridge, and I didn't see it. Like, I caught a glimpse of it, but I had no clue how big it was. But at the time that I caught a glimpse of it, it was way too late. And it was just this crater of a pothole right at the edge of the bridge. You know how the snow trucks, the snow plows, they'll grab up stuff and normally right there at the edge. And you got the sharp edge of the bridge because it didn't get cratered. And pow, we just hit it with our tire. Popped the tire instantly. It bent the rim. And so we're on the side of the road. I'm not happy. You know, I'm a little bent out of shape myself. You know, and so I'm on the snowy shoulder changing the tire at night. And I'm thinking, you know, if someone would have just put a cone there, when they realized, I mean, you can't take a crater out and not realize it. I don't know. I've never driven a snowplow, but I would imagine you're taking a crater out that big. Just put a cone back down, you know? Save me the trouble. And I thought, if I'd have known it was there, I could have avoided it. But it was like an unmarked grave that people walk over without even knowing it. And Jesus is saying, this is what you're like. And that's even more severe than just cow pies or bubble gum, or potholes. This dead that Jesus is talking about in this verse is a spiritual poison that you emit through the death that is inside you. It is a spiritual poison that you emit through the death that is inside you. And you poison others without them even knowing. So we've got two kinds of death that are kind of mentioned in these two different verses. We've got one, which is just the fact that there's a dead thing inside you. You have dead something inside you. Then there's this other kind of dead that's talked about that causes others to be poisoned, causes others death just by being around you. But really, these are the same dead. Really the same dead. Dun, dun, dun. Right, do that with me. Really the same dead. Dun, dun, dun. Ooh, that was nice and sinister. I like it. Very good job. Turn with me to Luke chapter 6. We're going to look at a story here in your New Testament. Matthew, Mark, Luke. It's your third book in the New Testament. Luke chapter 6. We're going to look at another story of Jesus interacting with the Pharisees. In this, like last week, is another situation where they're talking about healing on the Sabbath day. And Luke chapter 6, going down to verse 6, says, on another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, get up and stand in front of everyone, which is Jesus talk for it's on. Bring it. I just love it. His boldness sometimes. He knows what they're thinking. He's like, come on up. Stand in front of everybody. Let's see what happens here. Then Jesus said to them, I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil? To save life or destroy it? He looked around at all of them. And then he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He did so, and his hand was completely restored. Right in their face. Just great stuff. I want to take a closer look at what Jesus says to them right before he does his healing. He asked them, he says, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do nothing? Is that what he said? What, do we have the verse? We do have the verse up there. Are you guys with me? You're going to have to be, because I'm about to shift gears. All right. Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do nothing? No, what he says is to do good or to do what? Evil. It sounds like Jesus has kind of gone a little extreme on this. To do good or to do evil. It sounds like he's saying, you know, what's better, to help this man or to make fun of his shriveled hand? To help this man or steal his wallet? To help this man or to kill him? When really, for the Pharisees, it was just a simple question of, well, it's either help this man or you don't help this man. But see, through Jesus' eyes, not helping this man was a sin. Not helping him was evil. Inactivity was not only nothing, it was something, and it was something that was evil. Jesus says to save life or destroy it. It's not either heal him or do nothing. You're either saving life or you're destroying it. Jesus was awful radical about this. There's not much middle ground with this guy, Jesus. Save life or destroy it. This is how Jesus views this lack of inactivity in living the spirit of the law. See, they were claiming the letter of the law, Sabbath day. Jesus is quoting the spirit of the law. The law is all about doing good. The law is all about saving life. It's not about doing evil. It's not about destroying life. Quit letting the letter of the law and your legalism get in the way of doing the spirit of the law. All too often, we don't look through Jesus' eyes. Not like this. We don't see the dangers of our own inactivity. The dead, that means that you're filled with dead things, and the other dead, that means that you cause death to others around you, they're the same dead, because lack of involvement isn't just a choice of absent actions in the church. It's a choice to actively tear down the church. Let's write that down, because that's based on Jesus' radical view on doing good or doing evil, because doing nothing was the equivalent of doing evil in his eyes. Lack of involvement isn't just a choice of absent actions in the church. It's a choice of to actively tear down the church. See, you are the cow pie. Did I just get called a cow pie by the preacher in church on Sunday? Yes, you did. You are the bubble gum. You are the pothole. And it's so much more severe than any of those illustrations. We are the dead, that when we're dead, we have the dead things inside of us, and we share that, and we cause death in others without them even knowing. And we don't think about it that way. We just think, well, I'm just inactive. We simply look at it, well, I'm just inactive. It's not good or bad. It's just nothing. I'm just not doing anything. How can I be doing bad if I'm not doing anything? But Jesus' point is that not doing anything when you could be doing good is evil. Inactivity doesn't just result in no good done, but it's actually sin. Forgive my double negative, but that's exactly how I wanted to word that. Inactivity does not result in just no good, but it's actually sin. And Jesus' brother James, he agrees with him. He says, anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, does what? Sins. Okay, so if Jesus is saying it, that should be enough, but Jesus and James are agreeing, who am I to argue? I got to preach it. I got to bring it, because it's truth. We buy into this idea that if I'm dead, I'm just not hurting. I'm just hurting myself if I'm dead, if I'm inactive. I'm not hurting anyone else. I'm just hurting myself. But it's more than that, because when you're dead, you are poisoning others as well. failing to save life means destroying life. Failing to save life means to destroy life. That's Jesus, not Dusty. That's not Miami Town Church of Christ doctrine. That is Jesus himself. And of course, we take it in because it's Jesus. But I'm not saying it's not something you're going to read in some book that we've written. It's Jesus saying, you got a choice of two things, save life or destroy it. For the Pharisees, man, we're just not doing anything. What are you talking about? We're not destroying life. We're just not doing anything. Jesus says, if you're not doing anything, you're destroying life. I see dead people, but they don't know that they're dead. See, a lot of you are thinking, this is a good message for so-and-so. Oh, I wish so-and-so were here. I want to get a copy of this, and I want to send it to so-and-so. You know what? This is a good message for you. Because it's from God's word, and these are radical statements from Jesus Christ that every one of us need to apply and put into our life. And the truth is, a lot of you are dead, and you're deceiving yourself into thinking that you're not. I say, woe is me, I'm dead. You say, woe is me, I'm dead. Some of you might be sitting there right now saying, no, I'm alive, I'm alive. And I can say, no, you're dead. You say, I'm alive, and well, that's a great rebuttal for a four-year-old. Let's not argue back and forth and call names. Show me the proof. Because if you're alive, there will be evidence of life. If you're bearing fruit, there will be fruit on the tree. If you are a branch attached to the vine that is Jesus, that branch will be growing. It will be reaching out. So judge for yourself based on your fruit. If you're alive, then there will be evidence. Look around you. Now is it time for a woe is me moment. You know, I've said this before, and I will continue to say it as long as I believe it. And that is that I love this church. And when I say this church, I mean the people that make up this church. That's what a church is. It's people. It's not a building. It's not a place. It's not property. We have a church full of really nice people. People who have great hearts. And I truly believe that. But I get frustrated because we have a church of great people, and I ask myself often, what are we doing? What impact does Miami Town Church of Christ have? And we have some things to celebrate. Sure, we do. We've had 18 baptisms this year. We haven't had a month go by without a baptism. And that's awesome. That's something we can celebrate. But even looking at that, I'm thinking, man, 18 is a drop in the bucket compared to what this church could be doing. Compared to the lives this church could be saving. 18 is a teeny number. And yeah, I celebrate it because those are lives. I'll celebrate one. But 18, man, if we all reached out and grabbed one person in 1 year, we'd double our size. More important than that, we'd have some 200-300 people that became Christians and gained eternal salvation. What more could we really be doing? How unstoppable would this church be if everyone were involved? If everyone were helping out? And I don't want to think that it's a heart issue. I don't want to go there. And so when I sit and I think about these things and about this church, I think, maybe it's just because we're busy. We're busy people. We have busy lifestyles, and or maybe some of the people here, they don't feel mature enough to step up or confident enough in their abilities to step up and serve. Maybe that's it. But see, every road I go through and I try and venture down these roads, every one of them come back to the same thing, in that it is a heart issue. Because you make time. You give energy to things that you really care about, that you're really passionate about. You give your time to sporting events, to school functions, to hobbies, to your work, to your job. And I have to come back to the truth that it is a heart issue. If we really had the passion, if we really had the belief, if we were really alive, if we really understood the urgency of what we hold, of what we stand for, then we'd make involvement a priority. But it's not. Woe is me. I'm dead. There are a lot of areas to help. A lot of areas. I want to be very careful here because I don't want to browbeat, but friends, I got to bring it because this is the truth from God's word. You're either saving life or you're destroying it. And I'm convicted of that because it's words that Jesus shared. And so I feel a burden to share these things with you. So please understand, I'm standing on floor level with you. There are plenty of places to serve. And some of you, well, I was never asked. I've got many words to describe my feelings on that aren't appropriate in church, or probably just aren't appropriate, period. That is a senseless excuse. Some of the reason you're not asked is because the people that are doing it are too busy doing it to find other people to ask. That's some of the reason why you're not being asked. Some of the reason why you're not being asked is we might not know that it's something you're good at or that you're passionate about or something you care about. We want to get to know every one of you, but that's impossible to do, especially as this church grows. When we hit 500, 700, 1,000, statistics show that I can really only get to know about 45 to 50 people, and less than that, I get to know really well. You got to come out of the woodwork. You got to say, hey, this is something I'm passionate about. Hey, this is something I want to do. This is a place where I want to serve. I want to do this. I want to do that. And if for some reason we drop the ball and we forget, stay honest. I've had some people say, well, you know, I offered to do this once and nothing was ever done about it. I'm sorry. I dropped the ball. Sometimes I forget. I'm human. Bug me. Bug someone else. I don't care. Go around me. Get involved. Get involved in service. We've got children's programming. I was talking with Dawn this past week. There are some people that serve downstairs during this hour that serve 2 out of 3 months. So in order to get a church service with the family, they have to come to the 8 o'clock service. But if they're part of the 10:30 group and they enjoy this style of worship, and this is to the family, the type of people that they mingle with and they share with, they miss out on this. We need people down there to help out. We need helpers. Kim over here shaking her head. She's stressed. She's one of our recruiters to bring people in. We've got, what is it, preschool? We're almost empty there, aren't we? Who believes that our preschoolers need to know about Jesus? Who's going to do something about it? See, that's a problem. That is a problem. Woe is me. Think about that. Let the Spirit work on your system there. Let Him work on your conscience. We've got servers, which ironically, just this morning, at the same family. I apologize to be picking on the Sovereigns here. But Chris Sovereign's out there, and he's normally pretty calm, collected, you know, and his eyes were a little bigger than normal. And he said, "Where are the servers?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's me and Jack." And I was like, "Oh, we need servers." So we were running around recruiting servers so we could take up the offering and then pass out communion later on in the service. Because either no one signed up, or we were low, or no one committed, or no one called someone and said, "Hey, I'm not going to be here this week. Can you cover for me?" It's an easy job. You've seen them. They carry the bags and they pass it and they walk back and forth. If you can't do anything else in the church, if you can walk and carry, you can do that. And if you do that, then that could free up some people that do that and other things. And they're wearing themselves out because they're doing so many things in the church. As I said, I want to be careful here. I'm not browbeating, but I'm laying it out because this is the truth, church. These are facts. These are right here in our midst. Some of you might not know about them, but you do now. Greeters. I'm excited about our church. And you might not think it. You might think, man, this guy doesn't think much. I really do. I really believe in you guys. I believe in your hearts. And I'm excited. And it's not a problem for me at all to smile at someone and say, you know what, you need to come on down to Miami Town Church of Christ. You'll be loved. You'll be accepted. You'll learn. You'll grow. It's a great place. It's a great place to be. The worship's hot. Both services, you know, you like the 8 o'clock style worship. They do a great job with that. You like this kind of worship. Jason, the band, they do a great job. I'm excited about, you know what? If you're excited about the church, you can be a greeter. You know, you just stand out, you smile, you hand them a bullet, and you say, welcome. I'm glad you're here. And it's the people that really mean it. You can tell their smile's for real. I'm really glad you're here. You're in for an experience. We need those people at the doors. Some of the greeters are greeting a lot more than they need to be, or they're greeting because it's something that needs to be done, and it's not where they'd really like to serve. Take their place. Pastoral care ministry, all sorts of different ways you can help out there. Going to visit people in the hospital, helping out with meals, doing some behind-the-scenes type work. We've got meals that we prepare for those that have lost a loved one, and we offer a meal for them. It's a great time of fellowship, provides a lot of healing and a nice cathartic feeling. Sorry, I'm freestyling here. I don't know my vocabulary sometimes. But it helps them out down there, and you guys could... You know, I could cook a dish for that. Well, then do it. Don't sit back and wait for someone to ask you. Volunteer. Say, hey, I'd like to do this. I'd like to help out here. Helping out with our youth. You know, we're in between youth ministers right now. Great time to step in. The new guy, he's going to need some help. Step in, get involved, get to know these kids. These kids are awesome. We've got an awesome core youth group down here, down over there and there. They're kind of split up a little bit here. Get involved with them. They need it. They need you. They need your experience. They need your growth. They need your wisdom. Communion set up and clean up. Right, Lou? We can use help there. That is completely behind the scenes. You set it up. You can come in anytime, you know, during what, Saturday? Set it up. Stay after the service on Sunday. Clean it up, you know, whichever side you want to do. And you don't have to be in front of anybody. And nobody has to know that you do it except for Lou. But man, that helps out a ton. It's got to be done. Sound, PowerPoint. Got Nancy back there. Nancy, she said, it's all right, you can pick on me. Nancy said, hey, I'll be willing to run PowerPoint for you. Pal, she's here two services. On the day she runs PowerPoint, she'll run it for the 8 o'clock and the 10:30. And it's great because before that, Ryan was back there with the mouse beside the soundboard. Clicking PowerPoint while running sound all at the same time. Now, Ryan's capable. But does he have to do that? Not at all. Not when we've got a church full of people that could click a mouse and just know when the songs are to change or to know when they got to get scripture up here for me or they get a look from me. We've got a facilities group. If you like building things or tearing things down, join that group. Get a part of that group. Get missions. I've heard great stories about the people that go on missions trips. Who have we got? We got Mark Andrzejewski. Am I saying that right? No, it's recorded. Maybe I can bleep that out. There'll be a little blank spot, and it'll be Mark's voice saying his own last name. But Mark got a chance to go on a mission trip this past year. Great experience, wasn't it? Way out of his comfort zone. You're not going to live until you start getting out of your comfort zone, until you start doing stuff. And until we understand that inactivity is not just inactivity, inactivity is death, is destroying. It's causing death. It's evil. When you know the good you ought to do and you don't do it, that is evil. Got another way we can get involved. I got to blow through this quick. These orange sheets here in your bulletin, these are new growth groups, or some of them are new growth groups. We're pushing them all. September 11th, we're going to be launching these new classes. And the classes, I believe Ken Boatwright's the only one starting a brand new study on the 11th. The other ones are continuing studies that they're involved in. But these are some of our growth groups that we've got going on, a.k.a. Sunday school, okay? 9:30 on Sunday mornings. Brand new class called the Transformers, and it's not about how you can become an alien robot. It's about how you can be transformed into a supernatural Christian that you ought to be. It's going to be a challenging class. Larry Grubbs teaches it, and I encourage you, if you're wanting something like that, you're wanting to find out how to struggle in the life that we've got and how to become a witness and how to shine your light, that's going to be a class for you. Get involved in that. Larry Grubbs, I'll be teaching a discovery class. This is for new members. And I'm pretty sure Transformers will be taught again. So if you're a new member and you're really torn between Transformers or Discovery, come to my class just because it's a nice basic beginning. Here's what it is. Here's basic beliefs. Here's why our church does certain things. Here's how our ministry systems work. Here's some tips on how you can study the Bible. And a bunch of different tips so that whatever your personality is, you know, you might grab these or these. Here's some things on building a personal prayer life. Great basics course. We do a personality test, a gift test, so that you can find your place where you can better serve here in Miamitown. So if you're a new member within the past 6 months or year, then you'll need to sign up for that class. Then we got the other classes that are continuing. We've got the Chosen Ones, a large class that meets over here in the multipurpose room. And it's a challenging teaching class. So it can challenge even the mature Christians. It's a larger class and they do a lot of stuff to get together to keep the small feel. So they do a lot of things there. But their study, it's intense stuff, good stuff. So if you're into that, that's your class for you. Life Matters, a great class filled with servants. It'll be about 13 to 14 each week. But if you took the whole roster, it would be like 30 people. Because, is it right to say everyone in your class serves? In different places in the church. But that class, it's kind of a little bit of a younger age group, a young adult. Isn't it fun to be called young adult if you're under 45? But it's just kind of it's a very relaxed discussion group, and they take concepts, biblical principles, and how can we apply this to our life right now? And Koinonia class, this is for our older group. I was being very nice by saying 55 and up. Wasn't I, Koinonia class? All right, it's all right. You don't have to, 55 and up, but it is our seniors class. It is what it is. And they study in there. And these guys, I've got a few of them over here. I'm going to put you on the spot. Thelma, are you still learning? In the growth group, are you still learning? Things that you can use from God's word. And you're growing. And this young lady she's well above 55 plus. So she's all right to go to the class. But she's still learning. She's still growing. You need a growth group. This is a way to get involved and to grow and to mature. Then we've got the light class. And this is a class, it's a very warm fellowship. They spend a lot of time with prayer and prayer concerns and prayer requests. And they do some Bible study in with that as well. But it's a very warm group, very caring, very tender. Get involved in a growth group. Now here's what I'm going to have you do, because we're just proactive pal. These have check boxes. What I need you to do, and if I can get a couple of the Jason and Logan, can I borrow you guys? If you guys can just come down the sides of the aisle, take a pencil and check on one of these things. If you're undecided today, we're going to do this again next week. And I encourage you to pick up a brochure outside the doors there. This brochure is a little more in detail about these classes. So if you're undecided about what growth group you'd like to attend, grab a brochure. If you are decided and you sign up, grab a brochure, take it to a friend, invite them to a friend. So go on and take that, mark it now if you know that you're going to continue with your growth group, or if you are going to start a new growth group, or if you're going to switch to a different growth group for a few months. My class is a 13-week class, so you want to go through the discovery class. Maybe you've been a Christian 10, 20 years, and you think, it'd be nice to get a refresher on the basics. Come on, join my class. We'll have a good time. All right, so fill those out, pass them into the center, and Logan and Jason will get those for you. And this is going to help us out for room assignments, because we need to know how big or small the different growth groups are going to be so that we can assign them to rooms. As you guys are passing those in, share with you a story about my friend Larry Wilson. He's down here. I asked his permission. Larry sat in church for most of his life. And Larry, like Thelma, he's a young man, so... But he sat in church for most of his life. He sat in church dead. And it wasn't until, was it 3 years ago? Four? 7 years. Wow. 7 years ago, he was diagnosed with a terminal illness. And it wasn't until the doctors told him he was dying that Larry started to live. Larry decided to get involved in church, and he heads up our pastoral care ministry. And I tell you what, it is one of the finer operating ministries in our church. And I've talked to Larry about this. I've heard him talk about it before, and I talked to him this morning just to get a refresher. He regrets not getting involved earlier. He regrets all those years of being dead. Woe is me. Do you want to live life in such a way that when you die, the impact of your life will die with you? I mean, such that people walk over you as if it might as well be just an unmarked grave. It stands for no significance. No one really cares who's there. No one really knows who that was or what they did. You've heard the term living the dash. That dash in between the two dates on your tombstone. You gotta live the dash. You gotta make your life count. You gotta live. My friend Mike Ladd, we were talking about this subject, and I like this quote. He says, he's talking about a life that of insignificance, that your death wouldn't even make the bottom of the back page. Wow. That's an insignificant life. A grave that has no meaning, no purpose, no impact. Folks, we weren't made to live like that. You were made for purpose. You were made for good, not evil. You were made to save life, not destroy it. That's what you were made for. You were made to live. Jesus Christ came so that we could have life abundant. He came that you could live now, not just eternal life. Now, that you could have life now, that you could bear fruit now, that you could do something productive now, that you could have meaning now. Don't stand and sit there cold. This is exciting. You can live. You can be involved. It's what you were made for. You were made to do good, not just do nothing. You were made to save lives, not just sit there and do nothing. Don't be dead any longer. Make a choice, a decision today to be alive, to live.